When the true motive is love, there are no other explanations. Searching for them is like chasing grains of sand in the wind. Fremen proverb. Along with the wedding preparations, construction work continued at great speed to erect magnificent new temples to show the glory of St. Aliya as well as Muad'Dib. Towering in a public square, a tall statue depicted the Janus figure, the duality of brother and sister, two visages facing opposite directions, the future and the past, Aliya and Paul. Newly minted coins bore the profile of Aliya on one side, Madonna-like over two small babies, surrounded by the faint image of Paul Muad'Dib, like a benevolent spirit watching over them. The flip side bore the Atreides hawk crest embellished with imperial styling and the words, Aliya Regent. Aliya seemed to have learned the power of myth-making from the example of her brother. Even during Paul's reign, the girl had made herself into a powerful religious leader on Dune. Despite the anticipated joy and excitement of the wedding, Aliya quietly asserted that there was danger all around, and Jessica could not discount her fears. Such a spectacle would indeed be a tempting time for someone to commit violence. A team of Amazon guards never left the regent's side, and a Fremen troop led by Stilgar remained stationed outside the entrance to the conservatory where the twins were held. All off-world ships were searched thoroughly, every passenger questioned, each cargo deep scanned. Aliyah's inner circle priests carried the brunt of the expanded protective measures, with the Kizara Izbar proudly accepting a much more important role than he had held before. Jessica had not liked the fawning man when he'd come to Caladan to deliver the news of Paul's death. Now, the more Izbar insisted that he was helping Aliya, the less Jessica approved of him. When she received a secret-coded message revealing an assassination plot spearheaded by Izbar, even Jessica was surprised at the audacity of it. She studied the secret message again and again, listened to the surreptitiously recorded conversations that revealed Izbar's plan in all its detail. Then she summoned Gurney Halleck to her quarters. "Beware the viper in your own nest." Gurney's scar flushed. "Didn't Paul's man Korba attempt something similar?" "Yes, and that's why he was executed. Korba wanted to make a martyr out of Paul so that the priesthood could use his memory for their own ends. Now, these people mean to do the same with Aliya. If they remove her as regent, they will have only the baby twins to worry about." "You might be on their target list yourself, my lady, and Irulan. Ambitions grow like weeds and are as difficult to eradicate." The big man shook his head. "Are you sure of the information? Who provided it? I don't like this anonymous source." "The source is not anonymous to me. I believe it to be unimpeachable, but I cannot reveal the name." Gurney lowered his head. "As you wish, my lady." She knew she was asking a great deal from him, but she expected his full acceptance. Jessica had come to Dune to honor Paul, to strengthen the name of their great house, and to revere a fallen leader, her son. But she could do no less for her daughter. Aliya was as much an Atreides as Paul. Jessica tapped the scrap of spice paper and the words she had written there. "These are the three names. You know what to do. We can't trust anyone, even those in Aliyah's inner circle. But I trust you, Gurney." "I will take care of it." His fists were clenched, his muscles bunched. As he departed, Jessica let out a long, slow sigh, fully aware of what she had set in motion. That evening, after Izbar completed his service in the Fane of the Oracle, celebrating St. Aliya of the Knife, the priest bowed to the cheering congregants, raised his hands in benediction, and stepped back behind the altar. His skin gleamed with scented oils. Izbar's neck had begun to thicken with soft flesh, a plumpness that resulted from unlimited access to water for the first time in his life. Parting the rust-orange curtains of spice fiber fabric, he entered his private alcove and was surprised to find a man there waiting for him. Gurney Halleck? Recognizing him, Isbar did not call for the guards. How may I help you? Gurney's hands moved in a blur, fingers clenched around a thin cord of crimscale fiber, which he flashed around the priest's neck and yanked tight. Isbar flailed and clawed at the garrote, but Gurney's grip remained firm. He twisted and pulled tighter, and the cord swiftly cut off the priest's breath, broke his hyoid bone, and silenced his larynx. As Gurney sawed deeper with the cord, Isbar's eyes bulged. His lips opened and closed like a beached, gasping fish. In a fleeting thought, Gurney wondered if the desert man had ever seen a fish. He spoke quietly into the priest's ear. Don't pretend to wonder why I am here. You know your guilt, what you intended to do. Any plot against Aaliyah is a plot against all Atreides. He jerked the garrote tighter still. Isbar was beyond hearing, his throat nearly severed now. And therefore, it must be dealt with. Outside, the worshippers continued to file out of the temple, some still praying. They hadn't even seen the hanging fabric panel stir. When he was absolutely certain the traitor was dead, Gurney let him slide to the dusty floor. He peeled the crimscale fiber out of the deep indentation in the priest's neck. Coiling the strand once more into a neat loop, he left silently through the back entrance. He had two more men to visit this night.